helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing the things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Call 340-1045. That's 340-1045. Now, the conversation with Dr. Ali Kazrayan on News 104.5 WOKV.
Welcome back, Jacksonville. Happy Saturday to you all. We're so glad you're joining us today for the conversation with Dr. Ali Kazrayan. I'm Brian Middleton, filling in for Danielle Lee. We have another great show for you today, and I can't wait to jump into it. And to all of the listeners, just a reminder, if you have a question or comment at any point for Dr. Kazrayan in today's show, you can always call into our phone lines, 904-340-1045. That's 904-340-1045. And our producer, Scott, will make sure you get on with the experts. Doctor, who's joining us in studio today, or who's joining us on the line today, and who? What are the topics that we'll be talking about?
Lots of questions. So welcome to the conversation. Today, actually joining us via telephone from California is Dr. Aaron Spitz, a great friend to the conversation. He's a urologist specializing in fertility and reproductive medicine. Who will be discussing today? We're going to be discussing a couple things, which are both exciting and very controversial and interesting in nature. So, who better to help us navigate the topic? And so, basically, what we're going to be talking about is you know, it seems that far too often, and when you least expect it, there's another ad somewhere for a male enhancement supplement or something of, or a product of that standpoint that promises to increase your sex drive or improve your erections or, you know, guarantee penis enlargement and things of that nature. And, you know, what Dr. Spitz hopefully will help us do is to see is can all of the hype be true or are these just myths? Prey on people's hopes and desires for them to actually be true. Dr. Aaron Spitz, who's a urologist, he's a men's health and fertility expert. He's fellowship trained in these topics. And actually, he's a nationally recognized microsurgeon. And he's a clinical professor of urology at UC Irvine in California. And he's actually a men's health correspondent in a TV program. Everyone knows the doctors. And as we have mentioned a lot during the times he's been on the show, he is an author. And to tell us a little bit about that, I'll just throw it out to Aaron himself. Aaron, thank you for joining us today.
Ali, it's great to be here. Hello, everybody in Florida. You know, my heart is with you in a horrible recent tragedy. But it is also a wonderful opportunity to talk about health and well-being. And hopefully by the end of this hour, we will provide some really good, helpful information on the well-being of your sexual well-being.
And which is very important.
Yes, indeed. So, you know, we're going to really focus our attention on a private but very important part, and that's the penis. And when it comes to the penis, I wrote the book. Literally, I wrote the penis book, which is coming out Tuesday. So keep your eye out for that. And one of the chapters in the penis book focuses on this fascination and for some an obsession with trying to enlarge one's penis or trying to enhance one's penis function that in most cases is already normal and healthy. And there's a lot of bad actors out there who are preying on men's insecurities, the media's, inflated images and notions of what normal, healthy sexual function, prowess, size, and shape is. And what I'd like to do is sort of go through the list of these, bad players and get everyone straightened out, as it were.
Let me ask you, you know, as a men's health specialist, a reproductive health specialist, which for men is very much founded on the normal function of erections and then secondarily the not normal function of erections. And when you balance that with what you are discussing, whether it's correct or incorrect concern regarding your perception of yourself, and in this particular case, we're talking about your penis size. When patients come talk to you about this, or where you when you speak about this topic, where do you see the source root of the problem arising in the vast majority of men and their partners? You know, again, this is a very general question because everyone's individual, but you know, this has to stem from somewhere, because most people have normal sized penis, and I know as a urologist, you know, for better or worse, we examine during our regular practice. We are exposed to a lot of normal anatomy, but people do not perceive their normal anatomy a lot of times to be normal.
Ollie, that's a really great question, and there actually is some answers here. I mean, if your practice is anything like my practice, I come face to head with about 50 to 80 penises a week. And so, yeah, I know what normal is. But, you know, most guys have no idea what other penises look like, except for, you know, a scant few that they might catch a sidelong glance at the locker room or in the men's room. And so it's one of those things where it's really a black box issue, except lots of guys now, and this is really just a result of recent technology, and that is streaming content. Lots of us are now overexposed to pornography penises. But pornography penises are not normal. Those guys are in those movies for a reason. All right, LeBron James is not in the NBA because he plays pickup basketball like my son. So what men are seeing is perhaps, and some men are watching so much porn, they're seeing as many penises as you and I do professionally on their cell phones. But these are all extreme examples. I mean, the average porno penis is about 8 inches long. The average regular penis is about 5.5 inches long, maybe even a little less. And the normal range is from about 4.5 to 6.5 inches. And even a standard deviation above or below, that's considered normal. So we have either no idea what a normal penis looks like, most of us, or we have a very extreme idea of what a quote-unquote normal penis looks like. And a true statistic is that half of guys who come in to a urologist seeking penile enlargement surgery, or who are very distressed about the size of their penis, will confess that they got the idea that their penis was too small from watching pornography. So there's your answer.
So let me ask you this. How does this new increased access to pornography through the internet, which we've discussed on the show before, and the negative impact on that on male sexuality, how does that impact now women and partners, you know, regardless of sexual orientation's perception of what normalcy is when people are in those beginning stages of sexual relationships, and then through the life of sexual relationships, where that may be where they can what they consider to be normal. So men feel a pressure to meet their partner's expectation of what normal is.
Well, what the data shows us is that 85% of women are completely satisfied with the size of their partner's penis. They feel that their partner's penis is great. That's 85% of women. The other 15% is going to be too big or too small, not just too small. And the vast majority of women, when asked, you know, what is the ideal size of the penis you would like to have in your ideal partner, those numbers end up overlapping with the normal sizes of penises. I mean, the size of the vagina is made to accommodate the size of the penis. And fortunately for men, women are pleased with how men are built. And so actual surveys that actually take the numbers down show that fortunately, women are not walking around thinking that their guys are half-cocked. And even though the internet is displaying these outrageous dimensions, not as many women are viewing porn as men, although more younger women are. But B, in spite of this so far anyway, the surveys show that the satisfaction with the actual size of their lover's penis is quite high.
So as we look to what men are looking towards in terms of these products that are out there, and I say products because it's not just medicinal supplementation. There are other products out there that they look towards enhancement. What are some of the things that are out there, and what are the truths and myths that are out there, and how can we just demystify that a little bit?
Well, you know, there's a whole slew of items out there. Some of them are on the internet. Some of them are in your local package store. Some of them are in retail sex shops, et cetera. And, you know, most of them really are snake oil. A few of them, there might be some snake to them after all. Let's look at supplements, because penis enlarging pills are probably going to be what most people are solicited with, whether it's a mailer in their mailbox or, again, something that they've picked up online. And it turns out that these pills that claim to make your penis bigger, well, first of all, I can tell you 100% of them don't. There is no pill that will make your penis permanently physically bigger. What these pills do is they're basically playing on words. They may give you an erection. Some of these pills, in fact, may give you an erection. And that's their definition of making your penis longer, is more blood is flowing into your penis. But that is just a temporary size change. We've all had erections, and, yeah, our penis gets bigger when it's erect. And then when it's not erect, it gets smaller again. Now, you may say, well, hey, at least these pills are giving me an erection. That's something, isn't it? And the answer there is not as much as you may think. 8 out of 10 of these pills that claim to improve your erections or improve the size of your penis that are sold over the counter are spiked with real prescription drugs. But you're getting a lower amount than you would if you just got a straight-up prescription drug. And in a lot of cases, to cut corners, the sources of these prescription drugs is counterfeit. And those counterfeit prescription drugs may not be made in shiny, clean labs. May be made in cement mixers or bathtubs in other countries where they've already made counterfeit medications in that same cement mixer or bathtub. And maybe that counterfeit medication was something like Coumadin or some other drug that could thin your blood out or give you some very bad toxic reaction. So even if these over-the-counter pills are working, and somebody out there listening may have ordered one that really works, beware. The reason it's working is because it's got actual prescription drugs in it that aren't necessarily prepared in a safe way. And you're much better off just getting the same effective medication at higher doses, probably for the same or lower cost, now that there are some generics available, from your doctor.
So let me ask you this. So if these supplementation are potentially more risky, and if you kind of even look at the supplement list, which actually your book in that chapter you speak of has a great breakdown of a lot of the true sources of the supplements that may potentially impact erections and the physiology. And most of them are based on a nitrous oxide pathway. So when people have an erection, your mind's aroused, a number of things happen that culminate in the release of nitrous oxide in the blood vessels of the penis. Nitrous oxide is a blood vessel dilator, so more blood gets into the penis, and it sticks around there until the erection goes down and the blood is released and the erection goes away. Medicines like Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, this new one called Stendra, what these medicines do, they prevent the breakdown of nitrous oxide, so it sticks around longer, translating into a firmer erection that lasts longer. And a lot of these supplements kind of work along some of those pathways in smaller amounts and not as consistent of a manner, but they can sometimes be plagued with either inconsistent results or more side effects. And as you mentioned, when these aren't when the supplements that are produced pharmacologically, and they may not be done as well as the pharmaceutical medicines like Viagra and Cialis that are spiked with them. If these medicines are more risky, they're more expensive, and they may not work as well, why are people so drawn to taking them as opposed to going to a doctor and talking to them about difficulties with erections or enhancement issues and talking about potentially getting on a medication that science has shown could potentially help them?
You know, I think there are a few reasons why people opt for these over-the-counter remedies rather than seeing the doctor. One is perhaps the desire to remain anonymous. You know who your doctor is. You look him in the eye. You talk to him face-to-face, and maybe you've seen him for a vasectomy, or you've seen him for a problem if you're urinating, but you don't necessarily want to let that guy know that you are having some trouble down there when it comes to sex and sexual performance. Men view that as a very inherent part of their identity as a man, and it carries over. It's not just about their sex life. If a man is suffering sexually, it can carry over into their self-perception of how they are performing as a father, as a husband in the workplace. And it may be the kind of thing that they just have a lot of trouble telling their doctor about. And so being able to walk into a store or click a few clicks and get a product delivered to your home from an online source sidesteps that whole conversation. But the thing is, that's a conversation that really needs to be had. Because even if you are embarrassed to talk about it, as we've talked about before, as is highlighted extensively in my book, erectile dysfunction can be the first sign of a much bigger problem with your whole cardiovascular system, and it can be an early warning signal of looming lethal cardiac disease or even a stroke down the line. And so none of these over-the-counter remedies or online remedies are going to know about that or take care of that. And in fact, in a worst-case scenario, could even aggravate that. So I think it's shame and it's anonymity that allows people to make these purchases. Another problem, though, could be a misperception of the cost. These prescription pills with no insurance coverage in a branded form are really expensive. Brand name Viagra, brand name Cialis, $30, $40 a pill. That's a lot of money. And these products that they're getting online over the counter, they're not cheap, but they don't pencil out to $30, $40 a pill. The problem is the amount of Viagra or Cialis in, say, a $10 pill or a $5 pill is just a fraction of what they're getting in a real $30 pill. So even apples to apples, if they had to pay full cost, they're still getting shortchanged. However, now there are generic versions of the of Viagra available that pencil out to about $5 to $10 a dose, not $40. And so the misperception of cost, I think, keeps people avoiding the doctor's office. And then there may be an issue of access. It's hard to get in to see a urologist these days. There's more and more people needing the same number of doctors. A lot of, almost 70% of counties in the United States don't even have a urologist. And so it may take a long time for this guy to get in and get seen, and so he can get to it quicker if he takes matters into his own hands. But these are all valid reasons, and I think these are all reasons that the manufacturers of these over-the-counter products, these counterfeit products, know and prey upon.
Let me ask you though one last question before we go to break. If someone, you know, I see this all the time when patients come in and they're already on a medicine like Viagra, Cialis, or any of the other counterparts, and then they bring in some of these complementary supplements that they have heard about, and they say, can I take this, or I've been adding this onto it? That can potentially be dangerous. What do you say to those patients?
Well, in those cases, I'll slow down a bit and take a look at the ingredient list, because I do not think it would be dangerous to combine nutritional supplements from actual, natural, known sources, those of which are listed in detail in my book, that do enhance the production of nitric oxide, the very magic molecule that the prescription drugs are working through. I don't think it would be dangerous to combine those legitimate enhancers of nitric oxide with these prescription medications, particularly in people for whom prescription medications are helping but aren't getting them quite as hard as they need to be. But in these sort of proprietary blends where the ingredients are obscure or the manufacturers are not reputable, and so it's one of these compounds that is likely to not have what they say it has in it but has additional amounts of prescription drug in it, then what you're doing is you're looking at a potentially dangerous situation of pushing what you think the dose of the prescription drug is well beyond what you thought it was because this other product was spiked and they're getting too much. And that can be dangerous, particularly in somebody who has a liver disease or renal disease and isn't able to clear it from their system. Or in cases where a person may eventually need nitroglycerin. They thought, well, you know what, I'm not going to take the Viagra, the Cialis, because I can't take that with nitroglycerin, but I'll take this nutritional supplement instead because it's all natural, but it's not. And they take it with nitroglycerin. And the problem with combining the real prescription stuff, whether it's hidden and spiked or whether you've been prescribed it with nitroglycerin, is nitroglycerin boosts nitric oxide. These pills boost nitric oxide. Nitric oxide opens up the blood vessels to the penis, but it also opens up the blood vessels to the heart. And if you're on nitric oxide, boosting nitroglycerin, as well as the Viagra or one of these other pills, you open up those blood vessels to the heart too much. Is that possible? Yes. You can open them up so much that the blood pressure in those vessels drops so low that the heart can't actually keep pumping it through effectively, and you get a sudden loss of oxygen to the heart and a sudden heart attack. That's the danger. That's the only danger of these pills, really, from a heart standpoint, is if you take them with nitroglycerin.
Yeah, an interesting thing is that people may or may not know, you know, and interestingly, Viagra was initially being researched as a blood pressure and cardiovascular medication. And what they found was that it wasn't doing a great job for what it was intended, but they had a very difficult time getting the medicines back from the subjects. And so they tried to inquire as to why, and it was because one of the side effects of the medications, the men were noticing their erections were better. And so that really changed the tune of the research for the medication. And from that, Pfizer developed Viagra, which really revolutionized the way we manage erectile dysfunction. But because before that, we did not have a effective medicinal way of treating erectile dysfunction, and that was in the 90s. And it's only just recently that the Viagra has become a generic, and those medicines, which are called phosphodiesterase 5 inhibitors, increase that nitrous oxide. And like Dr. Spitz was mentioning, if you mix the two, you can significantly affect the blood pressure changes, which could be detrimental and could potentially cause loss of life. So again, talking to your doctor, making sure that you take medicines effectively, and talking to your doctor about the issues that you have allow us as a team to come up with a solution that best fits the problem that you have, so you get to the goal of the therapy and the outcomes that you're looking for.
All right, and it's time for a break. We're going to catch an update from Fox News in a few moments. Stay tuned. We'll have more with the conversation with Dr. Ali Kazrian when we come back after the break here on News 104.5 WOKV. Welcome back, Jacksonville. You're listening to The Conversation with Dr. Ali Kazrian here on News 104.5 WOKV. I'm Brian Middleton, and today we have another in-depth show. And remember, if you have a comment or a question on today's topic, you can call in at 904-340-1045. And our producer, Scott, will get you on air with our experts, Dr. Kazrian.
Welcome to The Conversation as we enter our second half hour of this Saturday with Dr. Aaron Spitz from California joining us. He is a urologist and a men's health and fertility expert, and he's actually the men's health correspondent on The Doctors and author of the penis book that tries to make simple what is actually a fairly elegant and complex organ that we, you know, we want. Don't talk about too often, but people quietly think about quite a lot, whether it's because they're having medical issues related to it, and that's where we as urologists come into play, or for a variety of different reasons. What we're talking specifically about today is the myriad of supplements and products out there that are marketed for a male enhancement in sexual performance, erectile function, penile enlargement, and the myths and truths of these products, which, one, often don't work, two, may be dangerous, and three, may be quite costly. And so to help us demystify this controversial issue is Dr. Spitz, who's an expert in this topic. And one of the things we're discussing between break are some of the actual products. We spent the last half hour talking about some of the supplements that may or may not help enhance erectile function, but now a lot of products have come into play that could potentially help enhance erections for people that are having difficulty with erections. So what are your thoughts about this new world of therapy or arena of therapeutics for erectile dysfunction where medicines have failed?
Well, there's a lot of hope and a little bit of promise when it comes to moving beyond pills, but not going to more invasive approaches such as injections or surgeries, because there is a well-established second line of medication when pills don't work, which are injections in the penis that do in fact work quite well. But what the hope is that there might be some treatments that could fix the underlying problem and allow you to have better erections without pills or without injections. And these kinds of therapies include such high-tech interventions as sound wave therapy or shockwave therapy, where sonic shockwaves are generated and aimed at the tissue of the penis. This is a therapy that many listeners may be familiar with for the treatment of kidney stones, because since the 80s, high-intensity shockwaves have been used to bust up kidney stones inside a person's kidney without making a cut on their skin. It's quite an amazing technology, and we use it. I'm sure, Ali, you use it routinely in your practice.
Yeah, extracorporeal shockwave lithotripsy. Historically, people may remember or hear about people sitting in bathtubs to break up stones. Nowadays, we're a bit more elegant in terms of how we precisely target that technology to try to fragment stones. Here, you use lower-intensity shockwaves targeted to plaques within the vessels, thinking that if you break that up, you improve the blood flow into the penis.
It turns out that, in fact, there is some benefit to low-intensity shockwave therapy to the penis, but this is still in clinical trials, and right now what the results are showing, it's mainly for low-level erection problems. Very severe erection problems are not likely to improve with this therapy. At least that's what the clinical trials are indicating. But what this therapy does do is it actually stimulates the growth of new blood vessels, and it releases some growth factors. It stimulates the body to heal and repair itself. So it's an exciting technology. The problem, though, is keep in mind, this is still in clinical trials. This is not FDA approved, but there are outfits out there that will pass themselves off as offering this very technology, claiming it is FDA approved, and charging cash on the barrelhead for what's actually a sham, was actually nothing of the sort of this very technology that does have potential legitimate promise. And one such example is a nationally prominent company called Gainswave. Gainswave touts that they are offering therapy to the penis, and the implication is that it's this low-intensity shockwave therapy. When you go to their website, they cite all the valid scientific articles that show how this therapy has been improving patients in clinical trials. And by association, you assume, well, that must be what their technology is. But then they go on to say it's FDA approved, which the low-intensity shockwave is not. But it turns out that, in fact, the machine they use is FDA approved, and that is because it does not produce low-intensity shockwave therapy. It's a device that was approved as a vibrator. It's an expensive vibrator that's making percussion, kind of like if you were to tap on something like on a drum or on somebody's back like a massage. And so this is a device that mechanically and automatically creates a percussion, a vibration, but it's not the low-intensity shock waves with all their very precise physics characteristics that are stimulating blood vessel development. But Gainswave will offer this therapy as if it is and charge a few thousand dollars for a series of these treatments, which are not likely to do much for you. Now, there's always a placebo effect, so I'm not saying that if you're a patient who received this therapy, your erections didn't improve. It very well could have, because in almost every study of almost every intervention, there are people in the placebo arm, the sham arm, that do improve. And I am happy for anybody that gets improvement, but it shouldn't have cost them thousands of dollars, and the company shouldn't say that it's doing something it's not. Is this dangerous? no, I don't think this is a dangerous treatment. It's dangerous to your wallet.
So, you know, the interesting thing about this this product is how is this okay? You know, in terms of the fact that, you know, if you go on their website, they boast a greater than 75% success rate. The benefits last up to 2 years. They really, I mean, you would not know this is not low intensity extracorporeal shockwave lithotripsy. And again, obviously, you are a very prominent urologist who specializes in this field, and you cover topics like this for very prominent media outlets. And we're discussing this with a very, very detail. So we're both reading this in a different light of depth. If you're just a regular guy who's having the beginnings of erectile function issues and you don't want to go talk to your doctor, and you Google ways of treating erectile function problems, and this pops up, how do you weigh the shams versus the legitimate therapies?
Well, the problem is there's really no way for a regular guy to know this, unless he's fortunate enough to be listening to this radio show right now. I mean, what you are doing is a huge public service to your listeners. And aside from interviews like this, this information is not readily available. And I'll tell you just how difficult it is to understand what's going on with this kind of deception. The Gainswave company recently put out a brochure, and on the brochure, there are quotations about how excellent low-intensity shockwave therapy is proving to be in clinical trials. And those are real quotes. And not only that, they put on the cover of this brochure a picture of Dr. Erwin Goldstein, who is considered one of the world's foremost authorities in treatments of erectile dysfunction. And he is the leading investigator with the low-intensity shockwave clinical trials right now. And they use his image, his likeness, on their brochure completely without his permission. And then they put a quote on that image that's from a different doctor. So the whole thing is just so egregious. But there'd be no way for anybody to know that unless they knew who Erwin Goldstein was, unless they knew what was going on with these studies, and unless they had actually taken a look at the FDA certification for the device they used, which I actually got a hold of and looked at, and was able to verify that the machine that they are using is not a low-intensity shockwave device. But short of that level of expertise and research, the public is an unwitting victim. And fortunately, as I mentioned, it's not hurting people. It's not likely causing harm, but it probably is delaying real effective care, and it's probably diverting precious financial resources away from real therapies that could have helped these people.
And so the rate limiting factor and the moral of the story here would be, if you're having issues related to difficulties with erections, talk to your doctor. It can start with your primary care doctor. Ask to talk to a urologist, because kind of weighing between the truths and the myths is important. The other thing to be mindful of is sometimes erectile dysfunction can be the first sign of cardiovascular disease and atherosclerosis, which are these plaques we're discussing. So that's very, very important to be mindful of, that this could highlight and open the door for an evaluation that may lead us to findings that may actually save your life. So have a short threshold for talking to your doctor, because it may, one, lead us to a therapy that may actually be not only effective, but maybe cost effective, but may also lead us towards the findings that may potentially save your life. When we look at this stuff, you have actually, we've covered a lot of topics in terms of truths and myths with erectile dysfunction. But one thing you kind of look at, that you look at in your book, is you actually have a five-step plan of how we can try to keep ourselves healthier, so we in turn keep our penis and our sex life healthier. What are some of the things that we can do to be proactive at keeping ourselves and our penis healthy?
Well, I'm glad you invited me to discuss that. I do have in my book what I call the five-step plan for maximum penis health. But honestly, the real goal of this book and of this plan is for maximum total health, because the penis is really just a window into total body health. It's a little guy filled with blood vessels. and it's a reflection of the health and fitness of your cardiovascular system. It's sort of your mini-me, if you will. So my five-step plan for maximum fitness health is really my five-step plan for your truly maximum health. And the five steps are as follows. And in the book, it gets into, you know, very extensive detail. It's very heavily referenced, so, you know, really leaves no stone unturned as far as understanding and being able to apply this. But of the five-step plan, step one I call go fork yourself. Fork, F-O-R-K. And what I'm talking about there is what you put on your fork and what you stick in your mouth. I can't overemphasize how important diet is to the health of your penis because of how important it is to the health of your blood vessels. And what this chapter, what this step plan will show you is that the very best diet for your health, for your penis health, is actually a plant-based diet. The very best source of your nutrition is from the produce section. You take your penis grocery shopping. When you take it out to dinner, opt for the veggies. Why? Because these are the greatest source of that miracle molecule, nitric oxide, which is what increases blood flow to the penis, as well as to all your other favorite body parts, including your heart and your brain. Step two is sexercise. And what that really is exercise and indeed sexercise. Rigorous routine exercise also boosts up the nitric oxide throughout your cardiovascular system and to your penis. It also, along with diet, counteracts toxins that are trying to degrade your blood vessels and your blood flow. Furthermore, along with diet, it helps reduce fat. Fat is like little toxic factories belching out these free radicals, which are molecules that get into your blood system and try to break down and degrade your blood vessels. Step three, go offline. We talked earlier in this segment about the harms of pornography and people's perception of their penis size. But it turns out that high-frequency pornography viewing, which the internet is awash in, actually reduces physical centers of your brain as measured on MRI scans that are important for your ability to have erections, feel love, to feel excitement, or even to reach climax. And after a while, you lose the ability to respond physically, sexually, because of this visual input from all of this high exposure of pornography. Step four is detox. You've heard it over and over again. Don't smoke. Smoking is a poison stick for your stick. It accelerates the hardening of arteries and the narrowing arteries, along with bad food choices and lack of exercise, but also drugs, alcohol, and many prescription medications. The healthier you can be and the less prescription medications you require, the better off for your penis, for your blood flow in general. Blood pressure medications and certain psychiatric and mood medications are big culprits here. Now, some people need them, but other people could benefit from a change in the prescription or improving their underlying condition. And step five may surprise you and may be one of the most important steps at all, and I call it snooze or lose, sleep. Sleep is emerging as this critical component of our health that we are only beginning to scratch the surface on. People who don't get enough sleep actually make less testosterone and have higher baseline levels of adrenaline or anxiety, which kills the erection. Turns out that lack of sleep or interrupted sleep from conditions like sleep apnea are now emerging as a risk factor for developing diabetes and high pressure, which themselves are known to hurt your blood vessels and hurt your penis. So that's the five-step plan to maximum penis health, but also to maximum health. Go fork yourself, exercise and sexercise. Well, and I forgot to mention the actual sexercise is those Kegel squeezes you do when you're trying to stop yourself from urinating or defecating. If you actually deliberately work on those, sometimes you can increase your ability to last longer before you ejaculate and increase the intensity of your ejaculations and also increase the rigidity of your erection, being able to squeeze off the drainage of blood out of your penis while you're erect. Step three, go offline. Step four, detox. And step five, snooze or lose. It's all there in my book.
And great, great information that not only keeps your penis healthy and your erections healthy, but it keeps you healthy. And all of those things can be generalized to all sorts of cardiovascular and general health aspects. Aaron, Dr. Spitz, thank you for that aspect of things. And one more segment left. And again, amazing amount of information that we covered that you take with you to come up with a great game plan of making sure that you are healthy and in turn your sexual life remains and continues to become healthier by the day.
And I have to jump in because we are going to take that quick break. But stay locked in. The final segment of the conversation with Dr. Ali Kazrian will be back after the break here on News 104.5 WOKV. And we are back here on the conversation with Dr. Ali Kazrian here on News 104.5 WOKV. We have a few moments left in our final segment. So, Dr. Kazrian, take it away.
So welcome to the conversation in our final segment. I want to thank Dr. Aaron Spitz for his knowledge and insight of a very sensitive topic that people actually have a very difficult time discussing with such candor. So Aaron, thank you very much for joining us as usual. It's always a fun time, and I appreciate you being so willing to share your knowledge with us and our audience. And we really look forward to your book, The Penis Book, coming out on Tuesday. It'll be at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And you actually just mentioned to me that you have an audiobook coming out on Amazon, which for our listeners will be great because it'll be listening to the voice of a new friend teaching them things that hopefully they have a little bit of a hint about through your joining us here on the conversation over the past year.
Well, thank you, Ali. You know, I really commend you for bringing these kinds of topics, you know, out from the shadows. And I think you do a tremendous service to your listeners, as well, of course, to the patients you see every day. So hats off to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And for our audience, you know, as Aaron mentioned, Dr. Spitz mentioned early in the show, we did have a heartbreaking tragedy in Florida this week with the shooting that happened in Parkland this week. And unfortunately, we seem to talk about this on the conversation far too often. It wasn't but a few weeks ago, if not a week ago, that we were having a discussion about the LEAD program that the American College of Surgeons has begun, specifically in response to the Sandy Hook program and trying to get people to the hospital quicker so that you can control controllable bleeding and you can make bystanders lifesavers. So go to bleedingcontrol.org. Again, that's bleedingcontrol.org so that we can all learn to be prepared because we can always learn and be prepared because, unfortunately, we live in a day and age which, for better or worse, we need to know this skill set. It doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be a gunshot wound. It doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be an active shooter situation, but it could be a car wreck. But unfortunately, we live in a day and age where things like what happened in Parkland could happen anywhere. And if you know how to stop an active bleed, you could potentially save a life. And go to bleedingcontrol.org. They have some amazing things. And again, the ABCs are alert someone, call 911, tell someone specifically to call 911 or do it yourself. Look for bleeding. Put pressure on the bleeding and use a tourniquet if you have it. There are a lot of great instructions that are on that site. Take them to heart. Go and look for times where you can learn how to take a class and learn how to stop the bleed because it can save a life and you can be the person who can see something and do something and save a life. It's becoming ever more important for us to take control of the situations like that and this is a way that we can be prepared and not afraid in a situation where people are trying to make us afraid of situations where lives can be taken. Be a lifesaver, not a bystander. Thank you very much, everyone.
And that's all the time that we have for today. It was another great show. A big thanks to you, the listener, for sticking with us this entire hour. Now we're going to get a quick update from Fox News. Stay with us here on News 104.5 WOKV.